Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this. I'll tell you about heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron.
Already, welcome to Soma Time as let Springsteen just kind of mill around the background. He's tuning up his guitar, fresh from a July 4th weekend that culminated last night with a hailstorm here in the local Larchmont listening area. So this is going out to all those who have been. Oppressed. Discriminated against.
In the blood of dog, that could be too much.
Vilified and oppressed. Perhaps a bit of rumors.
Born in the USA. I was born in the USA.
Subject of scandal. Yes. I can't count the bodies anymore, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot count the bodies anymore. They arrested the big ragu for drunk driving. Joyce DeWitt was on the cover of the Daily News. We're off the radar.
I was born.
I don't know. Even Mr. Bruce was the subject of paternity suits a couple of months ago. It's getting tricky. It's getting damn tricky. Up in this thing.
I went down to see my VA man. He said, son, don't you understand?
Manny Ramirez comes back. Gets thrown out of the game. Hero. Hero on steroids. The Manny Big Mommy. Yeah. Then there's Michael. He's all gone. All right, Brucella. We'll visit that again later. It is unbelievable. It is unbelievable that we're talking about this again. Wow. I don't even know where to start. But we have made it past the full freaking moon last night, and now we are basking in the glory of the eco-moon, the emotionally empathic eco-moon that says, there, there, little sapien. I know the Onto Beast was rattling your cage, even as early as 2 o'clock this morning when the hailstorm hit the building. And the lake outside had my car nearly drowning. I had to be like chitty chitty bang bang to get my car out of the puddle out there that was becoming a river. All right? I've had it. I know it's the summer, but think about it. Think about where we are. First lunar cycle of the season, all about loneliness in the past. Rejection, in your face rejection. That's what we're dealing with. And how are we dealing with it? Oh, brother, we're going up a pole. So now the Eco Moon is here. We might maybe have to consult a little guidance. So last week we had our friend Deepak around. So I figured, you know, who could we get as an eco to help us through? And I found one. You know, he's been on the air. You've seen him around. Reverend Al Sharpton joins us tonight. Hello, white people. Yes. How can I help you? Well, Reverend Al, we're suffering. We don't really know how to participate in this whole thing. You know, it seems like, you know, since Michael died, it seems like a lot of the old issues have come up. Yes, Brother Maul. We are a torn and fractured nation. But in the end, you will see my way is true. And what way is that, Reverend Al? Well, that Jericho never should have went out of style, number one. And number two, Eddie Murphy will be playing Michael Jackson in the movie. Not that mofo. That was the Black Wards. I can't remember his name. Oh, you mean the guy that played the other guy in the other movie? Yeah, him. All right, we'll figure that name out soon. I should have looked up the name. Oh, man. The guy from Incal, who knows? Anyway, thank you, Reverend Al. Thank you. Thank you, forgetful white person. Yes, okay. Hey, where Eco? We can forget these things. What the heck is his name? Somebody help me out. He played, what was his name? I'm gonna help me. Jamie Foxx, ladies and gentlemen, yes. Who played another guy that maybe we want to hear from right now, because I'm kind of had it. Let's see if I can find him here. I know, I got it. Let's see. There we go. Here's the guy I understood. Understood! What the world was about, what the world is. He didn't see one of us. Red Child. That's it, baby. This will ease us into our guest, dialing in from the West Coast. And there he is. Ha ha! Good timing. All right. I have no ability to go. Oh, here's the horn. Like a lot of my little things have gone the way of the wind here. All right. Joining us from the West Coast, bopping his head to the music, David Allen Goodman. Welcome to Summertime. It's getting silly.
How you doing?
All right, let's fade him out here. We had a little race relations there for 5 minutes.
There you go.
Boy, oh boy. So, you know, I know from your perspective that everything that's going on in the culture is I don't want to say fait accompli from where you sit, but I just want to get a sense of what's the shock value for you in the last, say, well, since last we joined each other on the night that Obama was elected, since November, we've had the bailouts, we've had all kinds of culture wars going on, we've had changes in policy. What the shock value on a percentage scale, you know, zero being not surprised at all, 100 being on the ceiling, what's been your shock value since November?
98.6.
Really? So you didn't expect any of this?
Well, I'm just kidding, because that's body temperature.
No, it's about, I was going there. There was a little side stroke, you kid.
What's happened, and I guess I expected this happening 35 years ago, which I'd love to talk about today, about a course I gave at UC Irvine called Alternate Futures.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happened is we are living precisely, exactly 100% in Brave New World and 1984.
You know, I was fishing around for that book this afternoon, my dog-eared copy of it, because I read it back in high school, obviously, in the early 80s. And that book spooked me out like you wouldn't believe. And, of course, Soma being a drug in the feelies in the movie theaters in that movie, in that book that became a movie. And if anyone's not familiar with David's work, I mean, just to give you kind of the highlights, he's a guy who's basically been there for the entire show. When you go back into the Cold War era, you know, late 50s, early 60s, the focus of all of our government agencies was on higher functions. It was literally sort of an arms race in intellect as much as there was in military intelligence. That's an oxymoron. And you were in on the ground floor of NIH and the ground floor of a lot of things that were going on in brain research. So just take us, how did we go from having a focus on developing the prefrontal lobes and having the teenage brains that were going to mature properly to going into a drug-based national type of effort?
It's a five-letter word. It begins with M. The second letter is O. The third letter is N. The fourth letter is E. The last letter is Y. There's a synonym to that. It's also a five-letter word. It begins with G, R, E, E, D.
Mm.
We become a Bernie society, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Well, the mullah definitely has hit the fan, as it were.
I mean, what does a 72-year-old man have to do with $100 billion or whatever the latest number is?
Mm.
You know, I was just thinking as I'm preparing for your call, you know, what kind of a world do the teenagers don't know about that existed in 1960? And I've written about this, and you've obviously read it quite a bit. For example, there were very few lawyers that were in the loop. I mean, if you handshaked and you gave your word, that was a contract. And you certainly didn't pay anybody $450 an hour to dawdle and waste your life and time and money to find clauses and laws and rules and tenets that you didn't know about. So that by the simplest legal procedure, you could run up bills of literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. That didn't exist in 1960 in any way, shape, or form, unless you were the highest levels of corporations and industries.
Suffering from depression in 1960. What are your therapeutic options? Is it pretty much just a Quaalude or you know, go?
Well, in 1960, about. Oh, that's just endless. I've talked about it so much. If you ask somebody who, as I did, graduated high school in 1961, if there was a single person in their school that took an illegal or illicit drug, and that includes heroin, cocaine, hashish, marijuana, and so on, whether they're from Idaho or Chicago or New York City, they would tell you nobody, except the lowest of lowlifes. The statistics about number of teenagers, and this is going down to 12 years old, who used an illicit drug in 1960 is 1 in 30,000.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 30,000. That's comparable to the number of people, children using illicit drugs in Outer Mongolia today.
Okay.
In fact, the average high school senior didn't even know the names of drugs. You know, what's that song, We All Get High on Cocaine?
Mm-hmm.
And it was changed to Champagne so people could understand what they were singing about. the number of mentally ill children was 1 in 1,000. And that those who are mentally ill is anybody my age. I just unfortunately or fortunately turned 70.
Congratulations.
Well, they looked mentally ill. They acted mentally ill. They didn't need a psychiatrist to tell them that they had juvenile bipolar disorder, which is another oxymoron, by the way, or they had ADD, ADHD, HDYD, or whatever they're calling it these days. This was just the fact that the frontal lobes or the prefrontal lobes or the anterior pole hadn't yet developed. So the kids were moody or difficult, but they certainly weren't mentally ill. And if anybody believes in evolution, how is it conceivable that mood swing as a disease afflicts more than half of all creative adult men? How is it possible that evolution would create a monthly mood cycle or just a general mood cycle that had no purpose except to make you mentally ill and put you on anywhere from 1 to 5 drugs chronically for the rest of your life, drugs that had only been tested individually on usually males about 45 years old or younger, and that were never taken in combination and certainly never taken chronically for a lifetime. And I could go on and on and on and on.
So you're saying if we're all staring at the same research, we're all staring at the same books here in the early 60s, we know what function is, we know what development is, we know the path that's supposed to be taken here by an adolescent brain into adulthood. And they staring at the same information, they said, rather than support this, because it's to our benefit to have high-functioning adults in the culture, we're going to take the greedy route, and we're going to make all of these dips in the cycles here pathological or pathogenic or pathognomonic or pathogized, and then we're going to treat every little symptom that has to do from the departure from optimal as a condition, and we're going to put it into the old Merck manual, we're going to put it into the DMS guide and all that, and we're going to create this entire generation of adults that are basically socially oriented to think that any departure from bliss is something to put on somebody else's prescription pad. They did that consciously, willingly, planning ahead, or they did that because they saw.
Well, obviously, you introduced me as saying I knew what was going on the inside in the early 60s.
All right, I don't know if I'm on or not. I'm back, 9:17 here on Showtime, on Soma Time. I think, let's see, David, you back?
Well, that may happen again because Big Brother is listening, perhaps.
Well, it says my show is on, but it's not streaming. So I don't know what that means. It must be the Blog Talk. Oh, there we go. Now we're streaming again. Who knows? You're right. Maybe they know you're on and they've absolutely just stick the black helicopters on the phone line. So remember to call before we get knocked off the air again, 646-478-4847. The show will be archived. You can't deny that. So I was starting to say a question there right before we got cut off. And you contending that the powers that be, early 60s, mid-60s, looked at the terrain of all the data that was being collected about brain development, and rather than support that systematically, they took the route of making everything basically pathologized and saying we're going to treat every condition that goes from below the ceiling of function and make all of those things something we can put on a grayscale and dole out to the public as saying, if you have any kind of dip from happy, we're right there to catch you with a drug and a prescription pad and any number of interventions. You think they did that consciously, willingly, and systematically, or just kind of evolved because of the, like you said, they saw gold in their hills?
Oh, no. I think, and we may get cut off again. I just want to warn you about this.
All right.
What we're talking about is a number of papers that appeared in psychiatric journals about it's the prefrontal lobes that make people unhappy, that the intellectual thinks too much. Was it Marvin Marks in Brave New World?
Yes.
He was the only person capable of crying and having musical tones in his voice. So he was exiled to an island or whatever, if I remember.
Yeah.
Because everybody had to be happy all the time.
Right.
And the fact that we all had a monthly mood cycle or a mood cycle that we thought was monthly or whatever meant that we were pathological half the time. I mean, they turned just being moody into something called mood swing, which went to bipolar, which went to, in a way, to manic depression, which went to now shadow syndromes. So about 50% of people who are creative at least think about going on some kind of psychiatric drug that, as I said on the last show, does strange things to the right prefrontal lobe, which is dopamine-rich, which enables you to relate with emotional and social intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So we, essentially, the decision to lobotomize the American people, as I wrote in a whole series of papers in 1978, was hardly by accident, because the frontal lobes disappeared suddenly and became merely right brain and left brain, and they were in dialectic opposition, a la the old Soviet Union with the dialectic, which, by the way, George Orwell called doublethink. That was his, his
well,
play on
1984, the whole idea of words having multiple meanings. Well, this is amazing, because you're saying that right around the same time that the humanistic psychology movement was being very sort of pilgrimage, they're claiming that, oh, you know what, there's a mind-body connection. And, of course, people like us, the Indians in the trees, were like, what do you mean? It already was connected. Why did we divide it in the first place? And so you're saying as that movement was going on, in the counterculture, that the predominant culture was further dividing the system up like this.
Well, the
creating almost like you said sections here, where you're saying we're gonna basically cleave off the different aspects of cortical function, so that there will be imbalance even if there wasn't before. This lobotomizing the culture is a pretty bold statement to make, and that's what got you on a short list of get this uppity guy out of here, huh?
Well, my phone conversation suddenly ends. unexpectedly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a brand new phone card. It's sort of
right.
Weird.
Hey, you know? I had someone here just mentioned to me that it could be the solar flares. We got past the full moon, but the sun protests your words now. This is pretty good. This is cosmic descent tonight on Summertime. Wow. So here we are now. We've gone from the early 60s to the late 70s, and now we have a culture that's basically being told that unhappiness is outlawed, and we're going to...
Yeah, well, the right side of the brain makes you happy. The left side of the brain is old-fashioned religion and stodginess and being literally disinterested in having fun.
Right.
And, of course, in the late 70s, you remember that, marijuana, which is really hashish these days in potency, was harmless. That's a strange word to use about any substance. In fact, it may be harmless, but there's an awful lot of evidence that it's not harmless to 11-year-olds.
Mm.
There was an article in Scientific American that said that cocaine was no more addictive than salted peanuts, and that's been widely cited. And, of course, nobody ever got hurt using heroin.
Right.
So that because of that Belial, that Baal, that fire god, that Zoroaster box in the living room called the television, you know, much as the Michael Jackson funeral, if you will,
yeah.
You know, when every channel and every station says the same thing, essentially word for word, regardless of political statement, it's only the most irreparable reprobates with rebel minds who can resist the power of social control through the television, through the newspapers, through the magazines.
Mm.
In fact, a whole lot of people wonder how I was able to remain, even to my 70th year, somebody who tries and I think successfully thinks for themselves and ponders multiple futures other than drugging people a la Brave New World or controlling them through 24-hour surveillance a la 1984, that I've actually written a book or a download on a positive future. And of course, in October, I'm going to the Society for Neuroscience convention and presenting N-Body, an entirely new science of predicting human dreams and mood cycles, and have studied seven different rhythms and harmonics that combined to create a rather sophisticated explanation for the totality of a human dream. And
wow.
since two of the main theories that are prevalent now are that dreams are random and have no inner logic, this is literally a paradigmatic shift and an astonishing science breakthrough.
Your download is on tomorrowwillcare.com, right?
Tomorrowwillcare.com,
right.
Yes. Anybody can read it. I've got sample chapters there. What I say as an antidote to lobotomize in 1984 is my point is there are five stages of neurological development, and only stage one and stage two are permitted, are encouraged or even permitted at the university. If anybody crosses over that bridge to stage three and then embraces stage four and stage five, they're probably limited in their opportunities, because the Bernies of the world are looking for the Michaels and the Farahs, people who are not wealthy, not famous, who will do anything to make the M-O-N-E-Y and deal with the G-R-E-E-D-Y
mm-hmm.
promoters.
So as a brain scientist and a futurist, when you watch the popularity of like American Idol or the dance shows and all these reality shows, basically you're seeing a nightmare unfold in front of you in terms of the way the culture, well, you're seeing basically the logical end of a lobotomized generation, no?
Well, I don't know. I decided that I would acquire a lady friend who wasn't an intellectual, who did watch American Idol and things like that, just so I'd get another and went to casinos and just get another picture of society. Because
mm-hmm.
there's an endless number of intellectuals, especially liberal intellectuals, who are aghast at the popular culture. My point is that this is not the popular culture, that the shows on television were
mm-hmm.
planned 40 years ago, or at least 30 years ago. And everything that unfolds is in a player piano role somewhere in the bowels of some agency that will go unnamed right now. They are opportunistic and adventitious, and they have incredible, we used to call them PERT diagrams, but they say in 1980, A is going to happen, and then in 1981, B is going to happen, and so on. So by the time 2009 rolls around, people will be absolutely drooling to legalize all drugs so that we can balance our budgets, et cetera. Every time I think of who became governor of the state of California, I have to giggle to myself. You know, you have a third baseman on the New York Yankees who's accused of using steroids, right?
Right.
Yet we have a governor who, if you believe what it takes to be a weightlifter in the 1970s and 80s,
mm-hmm.
Must have used the same substance perhaps 200 times.
Oh, self-admitted, yeah.
And because the Madoffs of the world, and I'm going to spell that M-A-D-E-O-F-F so I don't slander or libel anybody.
It's done here, yeah.
They picked little Arnie, and they created a coup d'etat. They removed Gray Davis, who was the legally elected governor of the state of California, filled the airwaves with accusations about the incompetence. Arnold, for a whole lot of reasons I won't go into on live radio, swept into power. And now he's in a position where to be Gray Davis is a blessing.
Right.
I mean, you certainly have read about a $26 billion budget hole.
Yeah, the California basically is you know, practically inert financially on paper at this point.
Well,
when he came in, the reason why they got Davis out was because they thought the economy there was going kerplunk, and they pinned it all on Gray Davis. And that's what gave Arnold the reason to, you know, to run, and they had the special election. And yeah, very strange that they've gone basically nowhere and from point to point, and nobody's pointing at Arnold here now. So
well, we certainly have a you know, I certainly love Arnold. I'm not slandering anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a radio announcer here for the San Diego Padres who said, take a look at Barry Bonds. Look at the where he put on bulk. Look at all those home runs.
Yeah.
So I called in and I said, what about our governor? And didn't he have unusual bulk 20 years ago? Well, of course you can't say that because the San Diego Padres require all kinds of corporate donations in order to pay their in order to put on their shows and so forth and so on.
So this whole infrastructure.
So the point is, why am I a voice in the wilderness? Everything I've said makes intrinsic good sense. I've certainly bounced it off hundreds of people over 30 years. And yet most people think that there's some kind of deus ex machina, some godlike presence that's going to save America now. You know, the way to save America is to find 1,000 people like David Goodman who could think for themselves during the 70s and 80s. And the next phone call should be the state of California that says, Dr. Goodman, didn't you teach that there were four futures for America back in 1974? Weren't you on the Today Show? Didn't you win an award as being the most perceptive interview of the year? I think it was 1979. You know, we really need you now. We need innovation. We need visionaries and dreamers. We need people with your credentials, like a PhD in neuroscience from the University of California, Irvine, a master's from Chicago. Do you think they're going to call me, or do you think they're going to take the old war horses, the Charlie Madoffs and the Jennifer Madoffs and the whole Madoff family, making their $300,000 a year, and they're going to make a special select committee, but not the committee of people like you and me who could really come up with new, fresh ideas that could save the state $26 billion?
Well, I think what you're saying here is all the bought and sold brains that basically want to perpetuate this status quo, not innovated at all, have of course, you know, it's the have and the have nots. We might have knowledge, but they have power, influence, and money, and that never, you know, you never win that struggle. So how would you create, there's been innovation underneath, but how do you create a revolution when you've got so many of the population basically, you know, loyal to the opposition, if you were, because they've been marinating in it for a generation and a half?
Well,
Can you pull them away from the television? Can you pull them away from the internet? Can you pull them away from, you know, all the...
I obviously thought about that, and with one of the major think tanks, I sat down and I wrote a 7,600-word document, which was essentially a televised speech by the winning presidential candidate to declare a national goal. And this national goal, as I wrote the speech and had many professors read it, would galvanize the nation. Because anytime there's a national goal and one that people can relate to, you're talking about 100 million people who, especially with, you know, they're talking about the Green Revolution now.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I mean, you can galvanize 100 million people overnight. What other reason was there for all this nonsense about Michael Jackson? His skills, his talents, his abilities are certainly superb, but so are the abilities of many people who die unmourned. And the fact that the poor guy died of taking 7 simultaneous drugs reminds me of some other famous people. I actually met some of them, who I read in the paper that they died of drug overdoses, because they know everything what the half-assed doctors tell them about drugs and mixing drugs, and they know nothing about neuroprotection. And that's the job I've had since January, and it's the most spectacular position I've ever held, that for pennies, you can flood your brain with nutrients from foods that can, in many ways, double your brain power. You know, when I say double your brain power, you know, somebody who could just turn on the right side of their brain who's dominated by the left is doubling their brain power, right? It's not an exaggeration. Somebody who's stuck in the corticina or the cerebellum or the back part of their cortex who can turn on the frontal lobes is really doubling their brain power, are they not?
But
somebody who can remember four or five dreams a night for decades and interpret them and link them to other dreams is increasing their brain power by one-third. So it's instead of sleeping. So what I just said, it's possible to more than quadruple your brain power, and we have all the ability now, and we just need the motivation, and all it takes is the President of the United States to have a fireside chat, talk to the American people, tell them the problem we're in, and then say that we all have a great deal of brain power in reserve that we're not using.
And then this company's called what, Brain Regeneration, Inc.?
That's what makes up my checks. Yeah, that's where I get my money
okay.
from.
Do they have a site up about their products yet or no?
Well, I was hired to devise new products that cost under $10. And
okay.
Well, I mean, we can talk for 2 hours about this because you know, everybody knows about turmeric and resveratrol. But, you know, you can go to a Spanish market and pick up a whole sack of turmeric for under a dollar.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things about both the drug and the supplement company, the Food and the Drug Administration. We've had other guests come on talking about, you know, the generics and the black market drugs and people getting, you know, going to Tijuana to get, you know, treatments for cancer, things like that. And in that movie Sicko, the people going to Cuba, 9/11 survivors to get the quality medical care. So it's almost like we know how to do it correctly. We know how to do it affordably. But like you said, the driving force is not quality. The driving force is basically the economy of it, that this is not something that they're interested in changing. So, you know, if people want to get a hold of the products that Brain Regeneration, Inc. is producing, do they have to contact them on the ground, through the phone, or how do they get more aware of their work?
Well, of course, these particular products have to be tested more and approved.
Oh, okay.
So they're in the developmental stage.
Okay, so not ready for prime time.
Well, I mean, obviously there are Chinese herbs, and I'm this is what I'm doing. This is something that should excite you.
Yeah, like I said, this is a whole encyclopedia of shows, because this is the stuff that, as we've learned more about the brain in the last 20 years, say, you know, the 90s and now, that needs to be applied, and it's been almost to the point now where it's been, I don't want to say gone underground, but it's been, I think you said the last time, those things have been put out to the public as being alternative and not approved by the mainstream. And the mainstream, who set the standard for the mainstream, is all the craziness that goes on, where they're you know, they're prophylactically putting kids on you know, big, intense, you know, drugs for behavioral reasons, and all, basically, nobody questioning that. If the situation was reversed and the cheap, affordable things, the natural things you're talking about, was the standard that the culture used, and somebody came in from the outside and said, you know, I've got these nasty drugs that cause transneural degeneration and all kinds of things, and we want to give those, do you think we'd let them in? So it's just very strange how in the last 20, 30 years, based on the same empirical research, the same facts, we've gone more into the pharmacocracy, more into the treating of disease and condition, and less into the supporting of growth and development, even though it would be more affordable, you'd have more productive citizens, you'd have a culture that was free-thinking. I don't think we can handle 300 million free-thinking people on this continent. Maybe they could handle five or six of us, because they can track us.
Well, you're giving me these most incredible segues. I mean, I couldn't make up better segues.
Well, I'm
talking about the Bernies of the world,
mm-hmm.
who adopt the Michaels and the Farrahs.
Right.
Who tell them that if they play their cards right, and believe me, I heard this when I got my PhD. It was said directly and indirectly. You play your cards right, you'll make a vast amount of money, you'll be famous. And you know, like the Jesus tempted in the wilderness by the devil,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Well,
or
look at the success of The Secret. The Secret lures people in on the ocean of consciousness to sell them how they're going to sit in their room, stare at a wall, and make money.
Well, obviously, Michael, and as I suggested earlier, I knew Don Simpson. I'd been to his place. I had a very good idea how many drugs he was taking simultaneously. And it didn't – he's a producer, you know, Simpson Bruckheimer.
Mm-hmm.
Beverly Hills Cop. you know, I wasn't surprised when I learned that he died of an overdose. Of course, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, you go, you know, indefinitely. But Michael being on two antidepressants plus anti-pain med and on and on and on, if Bernie wasn't running Michael, there are herbs and spices and plants that cost under a dollar that have more profound effects on the brain and the body than the drugs that cost $100 to $300 a month. I am not using hyperbole. I am not exaggerating. I'm talking about 6.5 months of reading books and downloading articles and reaching conclusions about alternatives, I mean real alternatives, to patent drugs. And look at Farah. I mean, I was just doing research on a garlic, boswellia, things like that the last week. I mean, the profundity of the anti-cancer potency of these inexpensive, I mean, almost free, they're given out in the stores, could have saved Farah's life. And I say this with a twinge in my voice because my sister-in-law, my only brother's wife, recently died of cancer of the lung and had all the bouts of chemotherapy and radiation, and, you know, bless her. And she did read books that I sent her and articles and synopses. But everything I've mentioned, whether it's amphetamine for kids or a high fructose diet for kids or chemotherapy or radiation, create the most unthinkable barrages of free radicals in the brain. And if free radicals are supposed to be the source of Alzheimer's disease, aging, Parkinson's disease, ALS, stroke, you fill in all the blanks, maybe more than 200 diseases, why in the world do the old men whose brains have already been damaged by free radicals still remain in power? That's what my book is about, mm-hmm. That there's a certain age, whether it's 45, 50, 55, or 60, I don't know, when the only new things the person learns have to do with their career and their ego. And I'm going to repeat that because neuroscience could radically, radically change America tomorrow. As Dan Amen, who you know from PBS, has said, if only candidates were given brain scans. You got it?
Can you imagine if they had that instead of the debates? They just hooked McCain up to an fMRI and they went, oh, no.
Or hook up Rupert Murdoch.
Now you're getting that. Now that would be saucy. Simon Cowell, line them all up. It'd be great. Put that on the driver's license instead of, corrective lenses. Has prefrontal lobe damage.
Well, my father is 97, and I suggested that he get a brain scan. And then I began to think that there are senators who are over 90 in Congress.
Mm.
My dad's brain scan, bless him, looks like the black hole of Bombay everywhere. I mean, he's got a sliver of tissue somewhere. I mean, he's essentially overwrought with senility. But I was just reading something on the internet today about how many senators in their 60s don't know their left side from their right side anymore. Have either don't know or forgotten geography and history. They don't know how to draw analogies.
And they're expected to read the budget bill. They can't even read a newspaper.
I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back. I'll sprain my wrist. But it's amazing. All I'm talking is common sense, that anybody who grew up in the 50s like I did understands that there are very few mentally ill people, that drugs don't make you better, especially multiple drugs taken chronically for a lifetime, cannot make you better. And
so
many...
I got something to add to this before you go, because this is a good tangent. This is like I'm just kind of rolling with you here. You might remember a man by the name of Roulette Smith. Maybe you crossed paths with him on the West Coast. He got a grant recently to study the uncommonness of common sense, or as he calls it, the increase in stupidity in the world that's causing the cost of the lack of common sense in the world as a cultural dynamic, studying it behaviorally and saying that we've basically systematically removed common sense from the culture and made everything that we would assume the average person would know sort of debatable. And so continue, because this kind of synergizes your point.
Well, I set up something that you remember about 3 years ago called the Brain Club.
Yes.
I found like 60 David Goodmans, you know, with cancer mm-hmm. cures and heart disease cures and mm-hmm. it's perpetual energy machines, people who had advanced degrees, MDs, PhDs, and so on. And I wanted to set up sort of a shadow think tank, and I guess maybe the sum of all your guests might form some kind of a shadow think tank that sets out position papers. Like if you really have an energy problem and there was no politics involved, you just used your common sense or whatever you want to call it. What would you come up with? And I would always demand four options. That's what my whole course was about. Remember I said you have positive, you have all these astonishing scientific developments, that you have expanded brain power. Well, that's the good news. And the President of the United States, or the Speaker of the House, could really push this to become a national goal. On the other hand, you've got this chaos, which is the absolute collapse of the country, or you've got living under 1984, a brave new world. And in order to stop this, all you've got to do is elect younger women who have children. I'm not talking about Sarah Palin, but I'm talking about that genre of candidate. I think simply by electing 20 women under 45, and there's a reason I picked 45, you can change America in the most dramatic way, and you can do it by 2010. Because when you turn on C-SPAN, one, and you look at the people ruling this country, I mean, most of them don't drool on camera, but white hair, mm-hmm. bald heads, overweight, speaking utter cliches, coined in order to move their audiences, whether it works or not. And, of course, they're all taking various kinds of gravy from the government.
Mm-hmm. And this is supposed
These are the worst people. Yeah. I would even pick young men as well as young women. I'd even pick older women to rule as a collective oligarchy than I would this collection of Bernies. And there are Bernies at every university I taught. Every one of my bosses has been a Bernie in kind. There's always slanted data if you're doing laboratory experiments. Mm-hmm. There may be exceptions, and I don't want to tar brush the whole world of science and business. But you can imagine that in order for me to give my paper in Chicago under the aegis of bioethics, when the paper has to do with a new model of the brain, gives you an idea of how we can counterpoint science and introduce it under an ethical umbrella instead of, you know, let's make money and sell my business for $25 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not unreasonable, because I have had my, you know, my 33,000 dreams and the journals and the algorithms and the models and all that appraised.
And then you're someone who's operated since the late 70s, you know, in this parallel universe of independent science that isn't tainted by all these biases and all these, you know, hierarchies and all this. And so now we're staring down the barrel of what you say could potentially be a huge paradigm shift, yet we're supposed to look at these old white men as the agents of a new age. It doesn't seem to jive here.
Well, I was very much influenced by a book called The Tragedy of the Commons by Garrett Hardin. Do you remember that?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, well, I started to think, here I was at a new school, UC Irvine, creating some of the first neuroscientists in the United States. Well, each graduate was supposed to go out and get, what, 3, 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 graduate students. And each of these graduate students were supposed to find employment, whether here or Iran or China, whatever country we decided to conquer to find work for our college graduates. But the point is much deeper than that. How could say, 20,000 scientists be turning out virtually an infinite number of new PhDs and expect this commons, the money commons, which is the NIH, to be able to support them all. It made it impossible for me to think about an academic career, because ostensibly, if you didn't take government money, if you took it from dirty industry, that was disreputable, and you weren't a real scientist. Well, of course, they did run out of jobs that the government invented, so they did have to turn to corporations, especially the drug companies. And I wouldn't be surprised that about 70% of my colleagues in one way or another doesn't badmouth the drug companies because of direct or indirect requirements that they, you know, let the drug industry and the invention of new diseases grow exponentially, because unless we find corporate funding, we're going to have, like in California now, we're going to be unable to pay our professors except with IOUs, you know?
So as this system, this corporatism runs its course, we've had Douglas Rushkoff on the show talking about, you know, going back to a local economy, going back to essentially a barter system, or having local currencies where people can basically deal face-to-face with the people they're exchanging value with. How would that translate to education, to healthcare, to all the things that these big, you know, too big to fail type industries can't seem to get their arms around? If we whittled it all down to basically a need-a-need situation, or as you're saying, empowering the individual, the family, especially the mothers, with simple, practical, I hate to say the word, old school, you know, methodologies, when the filter is always coming from the top down rather than from the bottom up.
Well, that's why I sat down in front of a computer keyboard for 11 months and did 15 years of research to show that there are five stages of human development, and the greatest minds in history have gone through these five stages. My book picks out a nice Jewish boy from 2,000 years ago named Jesus of Nazareth, and by using scripture as historically accurate, you know, in order to broaden the appeal of the book, I show that we have certainly an intelligent Jesus, and there's stories about him when he was 12 years old. We have Jesus who followed John the Baptist, who certainly asserted his personal power through his baptism. We learn that John the Baptist was beheaded, that Jesus went to the Lake of Galilee and was tempted by the devil, and you can take that metaphorically,
yes,
or you can take it meaningfully. Mm-hmm. He decided that John the Baptist was talking about the end of the world and people be cast into the flames and live eternally in hell. So Jesus does an about face and teaches love of God and love of your fellow humans. And as soon as he does that, he's followed by women and children who actually fund him, so he never has to touch money. And so that he's had some kind of conversion where he's enabled himself to become a right-brained individual. But I'm talking right frontal lobes, which is the center for social and emotional intelligence. That which is abolished by taking antidepressants of the SSRI variety.
Mm-hmm.
So that now he invents the Lord's Prayer. The book is called The Hidden Neurology of the Lord's Prayer. And I use the different words and stanzas of the Lord's Prayer to show that this is precisely the code for discovering all five stages of your neurological development. And the fifth stage, I've just mentioned the first four, the fifth stage is when Jesus decides to turn steadfastly and go to Jerusalem, that he's activated the anterior pole of both halves of the cerebral cortex. In other words, the word steadfast or intrepidly, to enable to follow your goal to its logical endpoint, even if it means that you die in the effort. Remember, he said the greatest good is to die for your neighbors or your, something on that order. The point I'm making is I'm not trying to sell biblical interpretations. I'm trying to sell that 2 million people follow that gentleman 2,000 years later, because he has discovered parts of the brain that people don't even know they have. And yet they say the Lord.
Yeah, if you can connect Jesus to brain development, to social intelligence, to all these, I mean, that would probably get you on all the news shows at once, and you'd have the reverse Big Brother going on, where you actually have a coherent message going out to people to say, strip it away of all the spiritual connotations and all the other things. This is the target of every human life. Would we to live that in that level of transcendence? No.
Well, to repeat, just go to www.tomorrowwillcare.com.
Okay.
And you can read a long introduction I have there, probably too long for the internet. You can read a sample chapter about how contemporarily and presently Jesus was looked upon as a human genius. You get a feel for it, that in order for a person to become a follower of Jesus, and I think this is my discovery, and I also have it on a website called The Dream of Jeremiah in a peer journal in Australia, that the warrior male had to adopt the stance and the posture of a 12-year-old girl, because a 12-year-old girl is the one who turns the other cheek, is the one who walks the extra mile, is the one who helps the poor, is the one who feeds the prisoner. And I use probably 100 scriptural references to show that that's exactly why early followers of Jesus, later called Christianity, caught on, because he gave them another way to think and act and to dream, if you will. Whereas Christianity now is just a rubber stamp for the same people behind Arnold Schwarzenegger and people
right.
like him.
They commandeer basically what we've been eating or digesting as a culture is a lot of icing with no cake, and lots of sugar, of course, and corn syrup to make sure the Alzheimer's foundation is fed. So to go back and just retrace our steps, because people joining us late might think they've tuned into NPR here. if you're going to go, just we have five fingers. If you go in stage one to stage five of the frontal lobe development, just so they have it basically to sit around the water cooler tomorrow and say, where are you on this arc? Stage one is?
Stage one is the intelligence you need to get a degree from the local university.
Okay. Stage two?
Is to set up a career and establish an area of expertise where you're considered the expert.
So all the niche marketing that's going on, all that stuff. Okay, stage three?
Stage three is to realize, is that all there is to life? And through built-in mechanisms to transfer the focus of control or the locus of control from the left frontal lobe to the right frontal lobe. There are three ways to do that I know of that are effective. Number one from Norman Cousins is loud guffawing and belly laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is whole body orgasms. And
okay.
Number three is agonized crying, which of course is the credo of the entire scriptures.
And that's your work with the primal healing guy, Janoff, right?
Janoff, right.
Okay, that's stage three. And then four, you said, was social
intelligence. Stage four is authentic innovation.
Okay.
And stage five is to stand against the crowd with your innovation. And in Jesus' example I gave is the Lord's Prayer. So
wow.
The subtitle of my book is Creating the Right Spirit for Human Genius. You're stuck in stages one and two unless you realize there is some truth in the scriptures that governed this nation back in the 50s, for example. You know, I'm certainly not an advocate of going retrograde and some of the worst aspects of the 50s, and I certainly recognize them. But you can't throw out the proverbial baby with the proverbial bathwater.
No.
I mean, certainly there is a lot to learn and a lot to love about certain of the scriptural teachings as I learned when I was 11 and 12 years old. And I find that the people that I'm attracted to, no matter how many degrees they have, all had a strong religious upbringing when they were younger than 12 years old. Sometimes they're Catholics. And when I turn on the television, all I hear is this lifestyle being slandered because somehow it's primitive. I don't want to come across as a holy roller or a Bible banger, but I'm a scientist and I'm interested in neurological basis for ethics and belief in a higher power and all that nice stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, spirituality and religion was also kind of blurred too in the last 20 years.
I just can't believe all this manipulated end of the world kind of apocalyptic, and it's going to come out of Russia and Iran, and it's just endless. You could talk to these people who believe, and they believe with a fervor, the same fervor they hated the Japanese in one war, and they hated the South in another. It just goes on and on. George Orwell in 1984 said that it's a society based on hate, absolute hate, just like absolute love is the basis of certain of the Christian sects.
Which is exactly what the Bush administration says about Islam. So
there you go. I mean,
yeah, the virtual mirror. So are we dealing a little bit with a lot of low-flying stage three brains that are disillusioned with the system that they tried to achieve in stage two and are now sort of churning around in sort of the eddies of stage three, and they can't quite get themselves oriented to innovate because they're so noisy and full of all that social spyware, and they just can't get oriented? And
beautiful way to summarize it. You know, there are people like John Lennon took primal therapy because he had all the power in the world and all the money, and yet he said that there's something missing. And the something missing is what Janov gave his clients, his patients, is a near-death experience. I mean, they had to just kill their old self and dissolve in agonized writhing on the floor. You know, the Book of Lamentations, the Wailing Wall, just the Weeping Prophet, Jesus wept. Just think of how primary this agony was before the age of Valium and Librium and Xanax. Do you understand we've lost what makes us human, what ties us to the past? It isn't the giggling wall. It isn't the book of happiness.
The giggling wall. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at that, but you're right. Basically, what we've done is we've outlawed human full expression, because again the polarization about having any negative emotion has been basically stuck into the CPT codes of every psychologist, psychiatrist, therapist, counselor, and bartender in the country.
Well, I mean, for a month since his wife died, and a dear, dear friend of mine, my brother's been weeping. I tell him it's great. He's human. He doesn't take Xanax. He doesn't fill himself up with Milltown or whatever the heck they're giving these days. I mean, but he's told he should be medicated because he's suffering from grief of the end of a 33-year-old marriage,
right,
of a strong woman who gave him direction in life. And he's been very successful as a consultant, as president of societies and so on, because he had a wonderful wife. So why take away what's genuinely human and replace it with industrial chemicals that cost a penny and a half each, if that, and they charge $2, $3, $4 for each one? What has happened to us? You know, I've just laid out three or four programs that have instigated, can change America radically, rethink food as medicine, rethink national goals as something that could be adopted and be successful overnight. Rethink the Christian religion and how silly it's become by some of these television evangelists and all that garbage, you know?
Well, except what you're saying is a lot of the antisocial and a lot of the aberrant behavior that's out there is a result of the leakage of these struggling, very disoriented brains that are just trying to evolve in their natural way, but because they fall into the cracks and gotten threatened and lost, as the somatic types like to say, neuroception, the ability to perceive themselves, they'll lend their identity to any one of these different causes as surrogate family and adopt a lot of mores that are going to lead them, you know, to go for the comet or drink the Kool-Aid or whatever you want to call it. And, of course, the rest of us are riding the train in the culture that says never let them see you sweat. So you got so much suppression and so much aberrant expression, it's difficult for a message like this to kind of get into somebody's toenails and stick, because most people look at all the alternative stuff, all the things you talked about as stage three type of behaviors where you're dealing with orgone energy, like, you know, with Rife and people like that, as taboo, as you know, stuff for the weirdos to do up in the mountains on the weekends. And the rest of us are going to go to a comedy club or we're going to go, you know, see a two-hour, you know, big blockbuster summer movie and get, you know, like the feelies and get oversensitized and go back and numb ourselves down because we're sort of afraid of that right brain because it's not stable. And it you know, you get what happened over the weekend with McNair and his paramour down there in Tennessee. And,
yeah, of course.
And you know, yesterday I was reading a story about a guy that his wife did the heinous act of hitting his feet when she was sweeping the floor, and he picked up a machete and started to chop at her body, you know.
Well,
is what we're dealing
well
with.
I think a wonderful high note or a high peak of this very productive conversation we've had, and thank you for giving me an outlet. There is not one member of my family, and who knows me better than my family, who has the slightest, and I mean the slightest inkling of what I devoted the last 35 years of my life to. In other words, the Brave New World 1984, the breakthrough science and growing the brain. A lady I spent 8 years with and talked to prodigiously, to say the least, about what I hope to accomplish in my life. If she had to write my obituary, I think it would be in the most general terms that the specificity of what I've been proposing, and I think I've been quite concrete on this show, is not part of her world. But paying $495 for a weekend with an expert on the quantum brain or the quantum mind or the quantum spirit makes sense because that's socially approved.
Right.
My brother, who's one of my heirs, were I again to die suddenly, and I'm in great health right now, so I'm not no forebodings here, wouldn't know what to do with my records, with my algorithms. It's not that he's stupid. He's a PhD in physics from Berkeley, my gosh. But in terms of relating to what his brother did, he would speak in the greatest generalities. My cousins in Chicago and their spouses, if asked what David Goodman did in the last 35 years, would say to a man and a woman that he's made himself a pariah. He could have been making $400,000 a year in the advertising industry because, after all, I did invent the first crude body scanner, which is transmuted into the brain scanner and all that stuff. And I never sold out to a mattress company. You know, he slept and then remembered 33,000 dreams and all that kind of stuff that I never taught in a major university. And so these are the people that know me and my present lady friend. If they had to say, what does David Goodman stand for, they would come out with, well, he's a victim. He didn't understand the system. If Bernie Madoff has all that money, why didn't he shine up to Bernie Madoff? You know, I'm sort of opening up my soul to you because in the Brain Club, there were 60 other people like me who would tell the same story verbatim, word for word, that people's eyes glaze over if you are more than a half a sigma away from the mean of their thinking. Mm. We're not talking Six Sigma. We're talking about the wiring in the brain that forces you to destroy or ignore the person who is different from the group. And talk about a hot area in neuroscience. That's it. People take great pleasure in punishing the person who breaks the rules. And I think from all this, you realize that I was such an enormous success around 1980 that these little gnat bites became scorpion bites. And as I was made into a very well-known celebrity, it was all vitiated over the years until I became further and further from the mainstream.
So how do you ride that rail from being innovator and provocateur to being you know, paradigm shifter, to being, you know, a Dr. Oz or one of these guys that like Oprah would anoint and say, you know, because it seems like there's a lot of pretenders to the throne that get their, you know, their 15 minutes of fame, so to speak, but they don't have near the foundation that you're talking about that would fundamentally shift not just a few percentage points of the collective intelligence, but it would radically upgrade a whole generation.
Well, maybe your listeners, I just took out a website called Hidden Neurology at AOL.com. Maybe they have some ideas on how to dovetail my skills and abilities. I just thought it'd be so simple just to contact the major think tanks. I've worked for some of them briefly in the past and say, Mr. Heritage, Mr. Hudson, Mr. American Foundation, Mr. Hoover, here I am. I'm available. I'm 70 years old. I'm about to sell out my company that I've worked on for 32 years or whatever. And I've got these incredible archives. I've got innumerable business plans. I've got manuscripts that haven't been published. I've got all kinds of friends and connections in high places. With that, I don't even need a resume. I don't need anything.
Oh.
They would just pick up the phone and say, you know, Governor Schwarzenegger desperately needs you. We need some original ideas. The dreamers, the visionaries, the innovators, every major corporation wants that. You know, the corporation called General Motors was not too big to fail. They paid $100 million for forecasts. Nobody gave them four scenarios like you gave it at UC Irvine. So my story is multiplied throughout history. You go back and read about, excuse me calling myself a genius, but you go back and read about Giordano Bruno, which I did last night. You read about Copernicus. You read about Newton. That we have not changed in 500 years. Still, the people, no matter how horrible they're led by a Stalin or a Hitler or a Pol Pot, they still show unanimity behind their leader, more or less. And those who want to assassinate the Hitlers or the Stalins, whatever happens to them, they deserved it. You see, they broke ranks. They broke the rules. And there's just so many experiments done now on what happens to rule breakers, people who dare to go more than half a sigma away from the mean. It's sad, and yet it means that there's almost an infinite room to grow and to access new regions of the brain. You know, I often think that to be really self-motivated is a new industry. I mean, not, you know, to buy the book The Secret and to take 200 supplements every day and all that. That's all programmed for you to think of as alternatives. But I mean to really come up to your own and live your own dream, like, you know, the 200 books on the library shelf. That is a radical paradigmatic shift. And all the Bernies in the world, with all their Michaels and Farahs, are helpless to stop the people from simply self-improving, doubling their brain power. I said left to right side. I said backside to front side. I said learn how to remember your dreams and have them govern your life. Right there is a quadrupling of brain power, and it costs nothing. You don't have to take a course. You don't have to buy my book. You don't have to do anything. Just say that it's a national policy of the government of the United States to lobotomize their citizens so that they have to pay $450 an hour to the experts who will tell them how to file taxes, set up a business, divorce their wife, and on ad nauseum. When I was a child, nobody made more than $35 an hour. even the chief executive, and they didn't even use that term, the president of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody says I'm worth $20 million or $90 million or $100 billion or whatever. It's an aberration. It's a ripple in the universe of time. It has nothing to do with the grand aspirations of the human race over the past 100,000 years. What we're talking about is the collective oligarchy that both Huxley and Orwell spoofed in their books read by 60 million people. So we have this basis for discovering our brain power and to look upon geniuses as hardworking and maybe even superior instead of inferior, pushing them around, calling up their publishers to get their books canceled, and on and on. Do you realize how simple this is? People can go to bed tonight and wake up changed in the twinkling of an eye, for God's sakes.
Well, like I said, from my perspective, it's almost like I feel like I talk to representatives of that fold every week on the show. We had, you know, Dr. Young on a couple weeks ago, and he's a guy who has five science degrees. He's got 500,000 slides. He's got 172 countries covered, and he can't get his methods of alkalizing people's bodies propagated through the system too, because the powers that be, or the mainstream, or whatever you want to call it, that message doesn't carry a lot of saliency for them, because it would actually reduce their power, reduce their control, and end this sort of tyranny of misinformation and incoherence. And all of a sudden, you'd have, you know, I don't know. Like I said, 6 billion people waking up at once could be kind of loud. And I get the sense that. It for your frustrations and your you know, sort of banging the head against the wall, getting the message out, that we've now reached the threshold where there are people on the other side of that barrier reaching out for people like us and your information, of course. So this presentation you're doing in the fall, tell us some details about that, so if people wanted to get more word about it or learn about it.
It's simply the annual meeting of the Society for Neuroscience, and I'm putting up a poster, and I will. It's called.
So it's a straightforward meeting.
It's just a straightforward meeting.
All cars, and you're one of the players, hand on the elephant, but you're in the room.
Right. What I'm presenting is how do clock genes generate human dreams. And
okay.
I will present for the first time in 32 years, or at least the 20 years since I've known the algorithm, a method for people to predict their dreams,
mm-hmm.
and to know that all dreams solve problems in a systematic way. I just read a paper where somebody utterly disregarded all the proofs that this is exactly why we dream, because they'd rather believe that they're random or they don't make any sense or they're just blowing off imagery and so forth.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, from the books most of the books you cited were written in the 60s and 70s, some of them even earlier. And again, it's been sitting on the shelf collecting dust because it doesn't fit the agenda of the pharmacocracy and that sort of chemical control of the brain proper that's been, you know, put out there as the only path for at least a generation now. So
there is good news, and I'm not trying to flatter you. I'm just trying to tell what I think is the truth. If you type in on your Google search engine David Goodman neuroscientist,
mm-hmm.
within 3 weeks my interview with you last time rose to the top of everything I'd done over the past 20 years that was filed under David Goodman, neuroscientist.
All right.
So just by having me on the show again, you know, perhaps thousands of people will understand that they don't have to sit there and drool and lose their houses and lose their children at the universities
right.
at $40,000 a year or more. They don't have to eat foods like that contain nothing but high fructose corn syrup that's barraging free radicals into their frontal lobes. They don't have to put their children on amphetamines, which are the worst drugs known in the history of man and woman. They don't have to be a clone. They don't have to be one of the jerks in Brave New World. They don't have to be one of the citizens of 1984 anymore. They can become themselves. Go to the library and get those 200 books on how to pursue your dream. They, the the machine in New York publishes those books. Every single Farah and Michael has written a book on how they did it all themselves, and they had a dream and pursued it. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. I mean, there are so many. I mean, I just mentioned that I was very famous back in 79, 80. Do you think I did that? Or do you think the magazines I wrote for and the newspapers sent out press releases and made me a star? You know, I had my 15 months of fame.
It's extremely intoxicating and alluring, and people want to be on the other side of that TV screen, to be on the other side of that camera. And it's basically become the big carrot that everybody's reaching for. But for the most part, you know, if they ever got that attention because of, like you're saying, all these other mitigating factors, it is going to be fleeting because there's nothing preparing them to share any message that has any lasting value because of what they came through. So, again, thank you for all this. There's a lot of food for thought here. You guys can, you know, basically open up you know, some nice ionized water, whatever you can get your hands on, to kind of go back and review the show and pick out some gems here, because David threw a whole bunch of them at us here tonight. And I hope in 50 years this thing's in the time capsule and we've gotten most of this message out to people, and the Brain Club rises again from the ashes, because I just see so many opportunities to use the leverage that we have right now, the sort of window of attention that we have right now, while everybody's kind of down on one knee, to tune into these messages, not as alternatives, not as you know, as these sort of messages that come out now as being you know, almost divine, but this is just practical stuff that just avoided everybody else's radar screen because the impractical was all they had on every channel. So hopefully,
well,
we got that out tonight.
I'd be delighted to set up any number of new websites where even a talk like this one could be made available to the public, even perhaps purchased at this for a token amount. But people have to contact me at hiddenneurology@aol.com, so I know that people are listening and people do care. Because I could go in either direction now, obviously. I mean, I'm becoming an old man. I still have all the zeal of my youth. But, you know, I can't just talk to the wind for 20, 40, 50 more years.
No.
Not that I'm going to live that long, but my message...
Well, you didn't talk to the wind tonight. I was listening, and the audience is listening. And I think, like I said, we're at a point now where so many families are affected by what's become Ritalin Nation, so many... communities are affected by what's become Prozac Nation, and you've got a whole generation of senior citizens that are rapidly losing their ability to just conduct activities of daily living. So you have a very neurologically warped society that is tired and disbelieving of the allopathic agenda, and not so much looking for the Andy Wiles and the Deepaks and all the other ones out there with their simple little, you know, messages. This is something it's complex, it's intricate, but it's completely intrinsic. It's an intelligence on its own accord, and you have a lot of access keys to it. And if people just understood that arc, those five stages you said, and they looked at themselves as someone who's in the sort of the foothills of stage three, they're disillusioned, they're angry, you know, they're outraged, but they have no strategy to get over that wall to get to stage four and be an innovator and be someone who can stand up to the heat that fries so many pretenders to the throne. You'd have a following that would be, instead of being a group think, it would be a lot of individual think, and that would then resonate as a giant, you know, neural network of open-hearted and open identity people that everyone that I meet on the path in this show is aiming for. So, you know, you've thrown your coin into the wishing well, or the giggling wall, or whatever we want to call it. And
You're great.
We'll watch the Eddies from here.
Well, just understand that for under a dollar, you can get the same biological effects that you're paying $200 to $300 a month to support the Bernies of the world, who have more money than God, and yet they keep swindling more and more people. And my message is that Bernie runs everything. Bernie wasn't just in banking. Bernie's at the universities. Bernie's at the drug companies. They're all Bernies.
Burn,
they
baby
have,
burn, as the Yankee fans say.
Yeah, they have in their power the people to discover that bloody brain. Because for God's sakes, for 40 years of my life, I was them, and I did do all those silly things, some of them quite productive, as I just said. But once I discovered that there are stages in my brain that I could develop in a systematic way and then give people the tricks, the code, how to do it themselves, I think that makes my whole life worth living, that I'm not an outcast, I'm not an outlier, that's a good word.
Okay.
I'm mainstream now. I'm as mainstream as you could possibly be. I'm offering multiple scenarios where America can go from here. You're in the mall of existence, and you're looking at this chart on the wall, and it says you are here, and you can go to Total Drugs and Brave New World. You can go to 1984, or you can go to Astonishing Neuroscience and Ethics and Protection and Chronomics, or you can go to the five stages of human development. I can't be clearer than that. That's it.
Perfect. You know? Like I said, I think, like I said, we've got something you could put a handle on and slip under the you know, noise of cacophony that's going to come across their TV set and their radio tomorrow morning, and they'll be like, wait a minute, I'm living this life. Why don't I get off this ridiculous trail? And like I said, maybe after the conference, we'll have you back on in the fall and see what transpired when you got back in the steel cage, as it were.
Good. I hope I'm older and wiser in the fall.
Yeah, I hope we all are. All right. Thanks a lot, David. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks for the time.
Take care.
Sure. Bye bye.
All right. Wrapping up another show here. We're getting used to doing these 90-minute suckers and. I'm going to get back on Ray Charles here to close it up. There we go. So there you go. So there's David Goodman. He's got his message. I should play Sweet Home Chicago for him, huh? And again, you know, we've had people on pretty much every week now with opportunities for you guys to just say, enough already. Let me try one of these things. Let me get, you know, engaged again and get out of this powerlessness that people are living in and start reclaiming your first person authority like we do every week here on Summertime. So it's another show, another message, another chance for you guys to travel light. So next week we have a sports psychologist on to maybe help deal with my meatitis. Well, they are winning right now. The Phillies did come back and win in the ninth inning again, but that's what the Phillies do. See? Bringing it right back to Jump Street. All right, so we'll be on the day after the All-Star game with the sports psychologist, Dr. Murray, next week. So for everyone out there who listened, everyone out there who heard, spread the word. This be Summertime. And I'm Dr. Mark. Thank you for this time and your space. Be yourself and be well.
Well, tell me what I say.
Spiral on.